The year is 2006. I'm Dave.
I'm Zach.
I'm Charlotte.
And this is My Marvelous Year. History of Marvel Comics, from its origins to today. I'm Dave Busing, founder and editor-in-chief of comicbookherald.com. This is a big episode. We are wrapping up our coverage of 2006 by talking the Marvel event, honestly, maybe of the decade, and definitely the biggest one of this year. I'm talking Civil War today by Mark Miller, Steve McNiven, and co. I am joined, listen, on one hand, I'm joined by the most civil person I know. It's Charlotte Fierro. How's it going, Charlotte?
Thank you. Okay.
Hello. I'm doing good. I do have one confession to make. I actually messed up. I went to see the movie Civil War, but didn't read the comics.
The new one, not the MCU good. One, right?
No, not the MCU one, the Alex Garland one.
Okay. Maybe you can pass for having read the comic just by talking about the movie. We'll see how that weaves in to the conversation. I haven't seen it yet, so I'm curious.
I'm sure Kirsten Dunst fights Captain America at some point in the comics. Is that, yeah?
I mean, more or less. I am also joined today by someone who, honestly, I've never been more angry at them. I've never been more angry at this guest, because here we are, Civil War, right? It's all about great friends become enemies, Captain America and Iron Man heading up rebel factions on either side of the Marvel Universe over the Superhuman Registration Act. So I'm ready to pick a side. I'm ready to battle with my former good friend. At the same time, Kendrick Lamar and Drake have reignited rap beef to yet unseen levels. I don't even know. At this point, it's so lopsided. We're recording this early May. Kendrick is assassinating Drake so hard that it's almost like sad already. But anyway, I was ready to beef. I was ready to battle. And then Zach, you suffered a debilitating injury, and I feel like I have to be extremely nice to you. I've never been madder. How's it going, my wonderful, talented, great friend, Zach?
That's so nice of you. Thank you. You did start this out being like, all right, let's get going. We'll do some pelvis talk, and then we'll talk about the comic, and I thought you were kidding. I didn't think you were actually going to bring it up. I'm good, thank you. I guess to let people in on it, I did go on vacation to Arizona. I went to the Grand Canyon, went for a hike in there, and then I went mountain biking in Sedona, and while mountain biking, I fractured my pelvis. So I'm okay, no surgery needed, but I am on crutches for at least the next month, so that's a bummer, but all things considered, pretty lucky and pain-free, so that's good. So, Dave, you can beat me up a little bit. I can take it.
That's very big.
Podcaster versus podcaster, the worst Civil War of all.
Well, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're okay. But I do think people actually know you're playing hurt and that you should get extra sympathy and credit for that.
I am really curious to see if we actually differ at all in this. I'm guessing we're all going to be roughly on the same position here. And, you know, you said Civil War, the biggest event of this decade.
Yeah.
Do you think, here's a question to start us off, do you think that that is the biggest event because of its actual impact with the readers and, like, the, I don't want to even say quality, but just the, like, how much, you know, people were, like, buzzing about it?
Right.
Or do you think that's just because of how much Marvel pushed it, right? Because this is a big initiative by them, right? They like retooled the whole line. They have a really iconic cover design thing that like is line wide that looks great. I love the kind of half solid color, half white background thing. But yeah, do you think that's like, because I mean, almost certainly, I think this is definitely the biggest thing of the decade. But is that organic, I guess is what I'm asking? Or do you think it's just through editorial mandate that it's the biggest of the decade?
I think it's a combination of the two. I mean, so like 2006 is a huge year for Big Two Comics as a whole. You have Civil War on the Marvel side. You have DC doing Infinite Crisis until like 52 era stuff. Like there's kind of just that something in the water of where superhero comics are at. At this point in time, I think you have like a post-2000s resurgence where they both on DC and Marvel had kind of reestablished like what 2000s comics look like, you know, targeting like generally speaking like younger male audiences, right? But kind of like building a new generation of fans. Obviously, Mark Miller, somebody who did that very successfully in the early 2000s, like on work like Ultimates and Ultimate X-Men. You know, we talked Wolverine. And then on DC side, you have Geoff Johns, who's starting to do it on like Green Lantern and Crisis stuff. Marvel definitely, it's a progression too, right? We've been talking about the progression of the era of Marvel events that really kicks off in earnest with Avengers Disassembled. But then House of M is the one, right, where they're really like, all right, what if we blow this out? What if we go even bigger with it? And then Civil War is the first modern entry in what if the whole universe is a part of this event, more or less, right? Like every title ties in. You have unique tie-ins branching out of it, some of which are fairly essential. For example, Civil War Frontline, or at least, you know, additive or telling a story in their own way that makes you reconsider the main event. And then it's just all out on the main event. Like, all right, make a movie, right? Miller, McNiven, and company, like, make this a movie. I do also think, so there's all of that. All of that contributes to the success of Civil War in terms of sales, the attention it's gotten, and the legacy, right? The fact that Alexander Payne is out here making a movie about it all these years later, obviously is, you know, what a legacy. The big thing, though, or a big thing, is Civil War, topically, has been in the waters of superhero media for decades, right? If you're a superhero fan of any kind, of any nature, it's like, I mean, it's up there with like, could Hulk beat Superman as far as just like common comic shop type conversations. It's also...
Wait, what do you mean? What part of the conversation? Like, who
should vigilantes be able to run amok, essentially?
Okay.
Right? Gotcha. Should they have secret identities? It's going to kind of core like superhero, like things you kind of just have to accept, but then you have works, you know, monumentally like Watchmen in 86 being like, what if we grounded that a little bit and said, yeah, what if the government was like, that's crazy, right? Why should individuals get to act outside of the law, right? And so it's a conversation that has been happening for a long time. It takes Marvel approximately 20 years post Watchmen, and obviously it's something that we kind of see building in superhero comics well before that, to sort of like more formally draw up a response in their way. But I, you know, it's just very easily lends itself to which side of the aisle do you fall on, almost in a political way, where it's like, you know, are you team Cap, are you team Iron Man kind of thing. But it's the core of it, I actually think is actually like a pretty interesting question. Not necessarily the like, should superheroes be allowed to be of the law, right? Because that's very fictional. But there's an interesting question, I think, as far as like, what are you willing to accept in fictional worlds? How grounded do you need it to be? Does it work? When you start putting that realism on it, is that realism even that real, right? I think there's a lot of interesting questions that come with the concept. So long-winded way of saying, there's a good reason this is so big. It's not by accident, and I think it is... I don't know that it's deserved, but it makes sense.
I mean, reading it, it feels like it's... I don't have, like, what are the events before this that are as big? Because we're saying biggest events of the 2010, of the 2000s. To me, it's like biggest events in Marvel, like, at all. Maybe Secret Wars 2 was huge in scope because it like, touched every title. But it feels pretty forgotten because it was so bad. And I don't know what the other... like comparison is, right?
Yeah, I guess in regards to like an event that really touches all the corners of the Marvel yeah. universe. You have stuff that feels bigger, like stakes wise. Does that even say yeah. like Inferno feels, you know, like a bigger danger, right? But it doesn't feel like this is touching every aspect of the Marvel universe. Clearly, like every superhero is in on this. I guess it
feels like there's a Marvel universe before Civil War and after Civil War in a way that I don't think is true of any other events.
I guess maybe House of Comics. M. Yeah, a little bit, but I still don't think to this degree. There's still plenty of heroes yeah. who are just like, who had nothing to do with it in House of M, and who, yeah. you know, besides the main event, just were outside of it. I guess the Ultimate Universe, I'd say, like, with their big events, because that does feel like they have big events where, like, New York gets wiped out, and it will impact, you know, the X-Men, Spider-Man, the Avengers, etc.
But that's easier to do when you have five yeah, titles exactly. yeah, yeah. going on at the sure. same time. So here, like, the only titles that aren't impacted are the cosmic titles. It's the Annihilation wave of cosmic stuff that we just saw being kicked off.
That's a good point, yeah.
So it feels huge and ambitious in a way that, like, forgetting anything else that's going on, like, just the specifics of what's going on in the story, I really, really like the idea of just the ambition of it, and think that by the end, you know that for at least a few years, the Marvel Universe is going to work really differently.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Like, it doesn't feel like an event that gets forgotten as soon as the last issue is in the shelves, like any other Marvel event for the most part, especially in the last 10 years.
I think Avengers Disassembled does it, obviously on a smaller scale, but it does actually lean into the vision of 2000s events and kind of the Bendis Avengers era, which is to say, when this event ends, the status quo will shift, right? And then stories yeah. that come out of this, you will have to know what happened in that event, because it will actually shift, you know, the foundations of, if not the Marvel Universe, then certain teams. I think as far as, like, where have we seen that before? I mean, part of the challenge is, like, well, we've seen it within X-Men comics and X-Men events a bunch, but not whole Marvel Universe type stuff. It is wild. And I hadn't really thought about it, but it is absolutely wild that Secret Wars 2 is the closest parallel.
I think to me it's Secret Wars 2, and then also a comic that isn't beloved, but like Heroes Reborn / Heroes Return, because that also impacts the whole mm-hmm. line.
Yeah.
For the most part.
I mean, Acts of Vengeance is line wide, but it's not status quo shifting.
It's not as, yeah.
You know, nor is it even like a proper event. But yeah, no, I mean, Civil War is the biggest. This will shake up the status quo for every book, or at least it has the potential to, kind of comic. And that's why, you know, you all were here. I wasn't here for it, but you did The Road to Civil War. You've got impact on Spidey. You've got impact on the Fantastic Four. You've got impact on the Avengers. You know, I mean, really the only comics that are like not significantly altered by this are the X-Men. X-Men plans more or less proceed. It's talked about a little bit, right, in the pages here, but they more or less avoid the Civil War, you know, and kind of the impact of that. But otherwise, yeah, like there's before and there's after, and the after, like, it's not like this happens and it's just like washed away, right? Like, there's going to be years of post-Civil War conversation, whole books that launch out of this that are meaningful, if not fantastic, you know. It changes what the Marvel Universe looks like, and I think that's yeah. probably a part of the legacy as well. Is like, this is the point in time, I think, where editorially 2000s Marvel says, okay, we want to go into every event and say, this changes everything. And with Civil War, it was like actually true, you know? And I think what has become kind of the problem 20 years later is like, they keep saying that and it, you know, but the batting average is like, you know, now 30% or something. But at this point in time, they actually more or less pulled that off. So let me ask both of you, had you read Civil War before, and no. kind of what was your early experience? Like, what do you remember from it going into this reread? Zach, let's start with you.
No, I have not read it. So
this was your first time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm totally out on like this era of Marvel. I'm like, you know, if I look through the next few years, I haven't read anything except for One More Day, which I'm going to defend passionately.
That absolutely checks out. that would have been the one that you read.
I think it's just I was reading JMS Spider-Man. That's more or less it.
Sure.
But yeah, that's it. So no, I haven't read it.
And Charlotte?
I had read it. Yeah, it's one of the first big Marvel events I read when I was getting into comics as a teenager. Because just the way it's talked about, I knew that it was one of the biggest thing to understand the Marvel universe. And like when I was starting to read comics, Marvel was less further removed from Civil War than it is now. So there was still a bit of an impact of it.
Yeah.
And I've read it, I've probably read it like 4 or 5 times since. It has been a while, it's probably been like 3 or 4 years since I've read it, but I have read it a few times, so I know, I remembered basically everything that happens in it. But this is my first time reading it with the context of the Marvelous Here Club, and with having the context of where are all these characters at this point in Marvel history, and the relationship between Peter and Tony, that stuff, the new Avengers. So definitely a new point of view of it, but yeah, I knew the story and I'd read it a bunch of times before.
When you went back to it, why did you go back to it?
I went back to it a few times writing reading orders for CBH because, well, this impacts every character. So
yeah.
Whatever character you're doing something about, they're going to have something to do with Civil War. But also, yeah, I mean, it's just mentioned so much in everything following up that I just every now and then had the kind of craving of going back to it. And I think... I mean, I the first times I read it, I didn't have, I mean, it was just, well, it's big, so it has to be good, right? That was my mindset, because I didn't have a great sense of criticism, I guess. So, yeah, it just felt, yeah, it's big, so I guess I have to read and reread it, because it's a key to understanding the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
I think this might be my first time really reading it under like a critical lens of, well, is it actually good?
Sure.
So yeah, sure. That's interesting.
I had a similar path. This was definitely probably one of the first modern Marvel books that I read when I was like getting into comics and really wanted to like dive into the Marvel Universe. I think that's not uncommon that it's like often kind of an entry point or like an early read, which actually I think is a pretty weird, it both is and it isn't built for that, you know, I think as a main event. And we can talk about that. I think in many ways, like there's enough like big beats and sort of simplicity to it that it actually is a fairly easy guide. But then at the same time, it is also, you know, pretty rooted in like where the Marvel Universe is at in 2006. In terms of New Avengers, in terms of like, why does Spider-Man have all these arms and he's working with Tony Stark? You know, just stuff like that, where if you hadn't been keeping up, it might be stranger. But yeah, probably same as you, Charlotte, probably I checked back in a bunch just for like reading orders, because there's a lot of like, I mean, the Civil War one on CBH, obviously, but also just for characters like Daredevil during this time is like impossible to... Like Daredevil continuity and this reading order don't work at all. like Daredevil being in the story to the degree that he is baffling and very weird. But yeah, it's I remember the first read thinking I had like two thoughts. One was like, oh, modern comics are like, I'm gonna enjoy this. Like I want to dig in, I want to understand it, I want to read more. But then I also felt like, well, I don't think that was great. Like, you know, just kind of like it felt, the whole thing just felt like thin, I think. Like, it felt like it was missing something. And I think, you know, realistically, like, I had no concept of tie-ins at that point in time. You know what I mean? Like, I had no concept that there were, like, things being filled in other books. I had zero idea. So I was like, well, this is, you know, if this is the movie, I'm missing a lot of information. You know? And they are, too. All right, Zach, what was your, this is your first time reading Civil War. What's your, how you feeling?
Thin is like a decent way to put it. It's a comic that I think is interesting and like works dramatically, like the actual plot beats, are pretty good. You know, like Miller kind of knows how to work that. The art by Niven is good and exciting. Good action. I like can buy the. It's like buying the actual tension between Captain America and Iron Man and these factions is good. And the, I guess like getting sucked into the actual war of it works fine. And then as an event that sets up a new status quo, as the Marvel Universe being like, spoilers, at the end of this, we have a superhero registration act now. And like, that is the new direction for the Marvel Universe moving forward. Good. Interesting. I think like all that works pretty well. But you said at the beginning, you were like, you know, it's a comic book shop argument, like should superheroes be, you know, or vigilantes good or bad, whatever. That's like a question that like Watchmen can get into. That's a question a lot of superhero comics can get into. I think it's like a question that the Marvel Universe and DC Universe generally shouldn't accept in like small doses, you know, perhaps with like single superheroes, you know, like who cross lines, or, you know, like the Punisher and Daredevil and Batman. Maybe, right? Like certain superheroes. So you start having this conversation, and I'm mostly totally disinterested in this because it starts like they can't take it to the like logical conclusions of this. And we talked about this during the road to a lot. It just leaves tons of openings and questions in how this performs. And then like the more you think about it, the more you're like, well, Captain America is really stupid here. Right?
Yeah.
And the ending is remarkable.
How do you mean? Because obviously people still are arguing Cap versus Iron Man, right? Those are
because
like,
like if you start actually thinking about this, you're like, okay, well, what's your end goal, Captain America? Like, are you, you can't win this. You might win more superheroes over to your side, but like the government, are you constantly going to be a terrorist, like fighting bad guys from the shadows? Are you, you know, like it seems like he's fighting this war to, the point is that the end of the comic seems to confirm that it understands that Captain America hasn't thought this through, that like at what point does he just turn into a villain and is like absolutely on the wrong side of the American government, right? Forever. Like 10, 20 years, he's going to be a vigilante. Is that like his fate now?
Well, here's
the, end of this comic is,
here's the counter argument to that, which actually is what I think makes this so interesting. So first off, like Cap has gone against the American government before, right? We see it in the Grunewald run very famously, the Captain arc, when they bring in John Walker, Cap walks away, you know, like, and I think at that point in time, it was like, it's like, well, you're gonna, you know, your question there, Zach, like, are you going to be a vigilante for years? Think, it's like, well, yeah, he was. Like, he was going to grow,
I think it's
a
slightly
sadness
different,
beard and, just, you know, be on the road on his motorcycle.
I think it's slightly different in that almost all those were motivated by, like, a bad actor in the government, right? Like, he's fighting, like, an actual villainous force, you know, a Nazi Richard Nixon or whatever, that just needs to be stopped and get the, like...
Well, in the Captain, he doesn't know that at that time. Like, he doesn't know the Red Skull's playing a role in things. He just knows that what they're doing is wrong. And I think the argument in Civil War is kind of the same thing, right? He's just like, this is wrong, so what's my end goal? I don't know, but I'm resisting something that I believe deep in my bones to be wrong. I actually think that's like, you know, I said this is a classic comic shop argument. I actually think it's like there's an evergreen nature to the argument as a whole in terms of like just resisting things that are wrong, even though they are the law, right? That
it,
is
it just,
constantly applicable in a lot of different circumstances. And it is,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
listen, this is metaphor. It's not handled with like, you know, extreme deftness or care, but you can apply that to all sorts of things in the world right now at any given point in time, right? Just resistance in the face of being told,
but,
you know, what you're doing is illegal, right?
Yeah, but I think where I agree with Zach that Cap can tend to feel a bit dumb in this is the way his side is fighting against the bill is by fighting the other superheroes in his community that are for the bill, and there isn't any interaction between Cap's side and directly the people that are putting the bill. Like, the argument is, it feels like the Cap's entire plan of actions to stop this is have a bunch of superhero fights about it.
Yeah, but it like brings into question the, it just starts making you butt up against the limitations of the Marvel Universe, right? Whereas, like one of the superheroes gets killed here, but it's accidental. like Goliath gets killed by a Thor robot. But, like, is Captain America's plan just beat them all up, leave them unconscious, and then he wins, and then walks away, and then what do you do 2 weeks from now when everyone's back on their feet? Like, the idea that, you know, it's like a civil war between them where no deaths, don't kill anyone. You know, it just starts, like, I don't know how well I explained this last week or last time we did this, but, like, I tried to get at, it just started making me ask a ton of questions about, like, the core conceits of the Marvel Universe that I don't think it wants you to. Like, the idea that superheroes should be unregulated because if they are just a gun for the government, they might not like where they're pointed at. It doesn't quite go as far as saying, like, oh, well, what if we're told to police, like, minority neighborhoods or do any kind of evils that the government, you know, sends in the military or the police or the National Guard for in real life. But then, like, what's to stop that superheroes just do that anyway, right? Like, it doesn't want you to start thinking about, like, yeah, but, like, don't some of these superheroes have some unconscious racist biases and spend more time in black neighborhoods, right? Like, or, yeah, like, that kind of stuff, you know, when it's talking about being misused by the government, like, all we can trust is our own moral compass and not any kind of oversight, like, a larger democratic oversight. Then it's starting to talk about it in terms of, like, well, these are all pure-hearted, perfectly moral beings. You know, like, that's the kind
of... Yeah, because these are all protagonists of their old series.
Right, exactly. And it's like, yeah, I can buy into that generally in a comic book. It's fine. But when you start making me, like, think about that stuff, it crumbles. You know, like, I don't want to think about, like, oh, how, like, how perfectly into... I mean, we talk about it all the time, like, how, you know, Spider-Man is... one of the biggest proponents of, like, the prison industrial complex, right? Like, that's already built into this stuff enough. Needless to say, all the other aspects that the government already is, you know, very, like, lopsided in how it deals out justice.
I'm picturing a Jonathan Hickman infographic of the racial demographics of Spider-Man, you know, webbed up.
Right, exactly.
You know, like yes, it does raise some new and troubling questions.
I don't want to like completely dismiss this entire event, because I think, like, on, I don't even know if the event is that interested in getting at it, at least like what Miller's doing. I think, like, the core event, I don't think wants to talk about it that much. I think the core event wants to have a fun superhero, good guys becoming the resistance and escalation on either sides, and maybe even, like, a slippery slope on both sides. Captain America gets the Punisher and regrets it. Iron Man creates a Thor clone with Hank Pym and regrets it. Like, I think they just want a fun spy, like, war resistance story. And I kind of think it works on that level.
But I think where it fails to me is there are some, like, emotional plot points, like, emotional story beats and big turns that don't quite make sense to me because of that core conceit that is like, to me, the decision of Cap of giving up at the end, I don't get at that point. I'm like, decides.
Well, I kind of did. I was like, yeah, of course. Like, if you know, because they say 90% of the population is for the Superhero Registration Act. So if he's just like, if every normal civilian is like, Captain,
Mark Miller's very
stop.
Bad at statistics. Mark Miller is very bad at statistics, but really? That one in particular made me laugh so loud because it's like, yeah, 90% of America is in agreement about something ever.
It's impossible. Yeah.
But it feels like the why he's deciding to give up is because he's saying, oh, we're fighting in a widely popular, in a highly populated area and destroying everything and risking people's lives. It's like, yeah, but the writers decided to have the fight there, right?
Yeah.
Those characters, yeah, if I'm going into the mind of these characters as they've been written, they'd probably both agree on, well, let's fight somewhere else. And I don't think the comic sells me on, oh, it's gotten bad enough that they're not thinking about that. It just feels like, well, yeah, he probably would have thought of that earlier, but comic needed him to not think about it until right now, which
I don't think I totally know what you mean. Yeah,
I don't think can't work. I just think it hasn't been sold to me that he's this far gone.
Well, let's talk like about really... what you're both raising. I want to raise the cap.
Wait, because okay, no, please go on. I'll put it
just to focus on cap and kind of just the objective, you know, and that being an issue. Because the way this comic ends, I think, is very much in support of what you're saying, Zach. like him mid final battle, hero on hero with civilians at risk, and Cap being like, "What have I done?" And suddenly having this moment, this epiphany of, "Oh, am I the baddie?" Right?
Yeah.
That to me, narratively, I think Miller doesn't have an answer for why Cap's doing it. But I think so. I think you're right to feel that. I think what makes it what you're describing is also what makes it interesting, though, because you're like, well, there's some things in the Marvel Universe that are better not to poke at too thoroughly because then they become a problem. I think that's a huge part, though, of why Civil War is so big and gets so much attention, because it is the book. Like the things that Mark Miller is very good at is he knows where to poke, right? He knows what the irritant is or what like the big idea is that is going to get the most people thinking or talking, actually not thinking, that is going to get the most people talking or fighting about something, right? And I think actually poking at should superheroes be registered, but like really committing to that, you know what I mean? It's not just like floated out there, but it's really committed. Like the bill is passed or to the floor or whatever in the first issue or by the end of the first or second issue, right? It's committing to that in a way that I think makes it feel like, okay, they're really doing this, you know? And if they're going to really do it, then what am I still willing to accept certain, you know, fictional universe elements that we've always just sort of, you have to take for granted to enjoy these stories. You know, it's the famous Grant Morrison quote of like, you know, these adults start reading super comics and they're like, you know, but it's not realistic. Who's changing Batman's tires or whatever? And Morrison, they're like, nobody, you idiot. Like it's a superhero story. Like that's not, that's not the point. I'm horribly paraphrasing this.
Yeah.
But the point is like, not everything is to be questioned. The fact that Civil War does though, and really commits to it, I think is interesting. And is why people keep coming back to it. As far as the Cap piece of it goes, I don't think he needs to have a solution. I think just like continual resistance to something you think is wrong. I don't think he needs to have an end game. It does. I think you can very fairly say like Tony's way more pragmatic. Tony is playing the game way better. He's actually talking to the people making the bills, right? Cap has no lobbying element, you know, in Washington. Like strategically, poke at that all you want.
I think it gives the like character side of this event somewhat like an arbitrary feel. Because and I think that really extends outside of Cap and Tony Stark and like maybe a couple other people where like you have so many superheroes milling around the background on each side, and it feels like, you know, if I write a list to you of all these superheroes and be like, which side would they join? I think for most of them, you'd be like, I don't know. And then I would tell you which one they join. You'd be like, oh, okay. I guess She-Hulk is pro-registration, but I mean, Daredevil being anti-registration makes perfect sense, but like, where is, you know, like Storm and Black Panther, where are they going to land? Well, they land on one side until they don't
step out of it, more or less.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, until Goliath gets killed and then they jump in.
You know, I kind of started agreeing with you, but thinking about it, I don't actually know. Well, I don't actually know that like the team dynamics are that. I don't actually know that they're that weird. I mean, I think so. Let me back up though. Even so, like, you know, we've got our two sides. We've got Captain America's resistance. We've got Iron Man's, no, we really should be registered. And, you know, the kind of argument being like, there shouldn't, you know, because the inciting incident, which we've skipped over, is there's the young, you know, teen, maybe early 20s something heroes, the new warriors, they're the craving reality TV fame, that whole era, right? And they go after some superheroes. They're way out of their element. Nitro blows up on Speedball after being pushed into a school bus by Namorita, and it blows up like a huge area right next to a school. Right, so you have this horrible tragedy in Stamford, Connecticut. Mark Miller says like 700 to 800, I don't know if it's kids died, people died. It's a large number, right? That's the inciting incident that then they're like, hey, these superheroes need to be registered. So are you both Team Iron Man based on the questioning Cap?
Yeah, I don't think I don't think the comic makes a particularly strong case for either direction, honestly. I mean, that's kind of... Like, when you were like, it gives you a lot to think about.
I walk that back immediately.
Okay. Okay. All right. Good. Because I like, I just don't think like this is a comic that makes it thorny at all. Right. Like it doesn't. I wish it did. That was the thing. Because you know I'd be predisposed to like, yeah, it makes sense. Like you should be regulated. It like maybe it tries to by like, oh well the registration side is also using supervillains as like mercenaries. You know, but that's it, just. That's just a thing. That's not like a natural. It's not a natural conclusion of the Superhero Registration Act is that they would use supervillains as mercenaries. So it's not like I'm opposed to that idea. I'm just kind of opposed to the.
Did it feel to you like they knew, like it was like Tony's side was kind of very logical, right? And it was kind of very like it makes so much sense that they were like, we better undercut this. Every issue because
yeah a little bit.
Right because every action point. They take is increasingly egregious you know
sure. Yeah.
To make them like more and more
a negative zone prison and like cloning Thor
yeah, yeah. Murders.
I don't think the argument is cohesive enough for me to say am I team Cap or am I
sure
team
yeah that too yeah.
If I'm looking at the argument in universe I'm Team Cap because the way the book is selling it is Cap's side is naive but for freedom and Tony's side is logical but behaving in insane ways and making dictator-like authoritative decisions that murder people.
So they can all become cops too.
Right, yeah. I think my main problem is with this is I don't quite know what happens when the bill is passed. So, outside of the superheroes
we talked
know
about this last week, yeah.
Yeah, the bill is about all superpowered people. And I think the fact that the X-Men are pretty much out of the story is a big part of why it doesn't work for me. Because I need to know, okay, what does this mean for the random mutants living in the block next door and who isn't a superhero at all. He just has like three arms. I don't know. What happens to that guy? Is he forced to join S.H.I.E.L.D. and become a cop?
I think the semantic way around that is it's not just that you have powers, but it's that you're using them as a vigilante.
Well, so, because like, that also, that makes it so that I think all these people who are opposed to the Superhero Registration Act, if you can just stop being a superhero and not be affected by this, then
you can
like,
just live your life.
Do it, you weenie. Like, stop being, you know, if you're like, oh, I don't want to be a military agent of, you know, the government, but I have to fight street crime, then I'm like, that also starts being like, okay, well, this is like, they're pathological, right? It's like the joke that, it's like the bad joke that people make in Marvel comics sometimes about like only a lunatic would put on swing around in underwear and fight bad guys in the street, like, you know, the silly, you have to buy the conceit of the comic, but in this case now it makes it start to seem silly. Now it makes it seem like, oh well, like you're messed up, like if you can't stop doing this, right, like you have to be doing, you know,
I think that cynicism is very much a part of Miller's avoir. I mean, that's very much Ennis and the boys. Sure. It carries over here. I mean, there's a very funny moment early, unintentionally funny, when the New Warriors raid the supervillains. The supervillainous
like,
who's outside runs in.
Quick,
put on your costumes. And like, that's a boys joke, you know?
Yeah, it's good.
But here it's kind of unknowing. And it's like that to me. Yes, it is. It is poking. I don't think it really means to, but it's definitely poking sort of cynically at the idea that someone would put on a uniform and a costume and go beat up quote-unquote criminals, right?
Which I like in... I can deal with that in something else using... You know, like, The Boys, that's fine. I mean, not that I love The Boys, but, like, in The Boys, that's okay because that's getting at something else, right? That's getting at, like, that these are all sociopaths. You don't want to start making me think that about, like, She-Hulk, right? You don't want me to, like, start framing, like, that all these people are, like, empty inside and they only like they get a real thrill out of beating up villains, like, you know, you want it to be more noble in the Marvel.
I don't know. There are ways to do that. I mean, like, Daredevil does that a lot pretty successfully.
It's true. Daredevil specifically can do that, but when it's extended universe wide here, I think it just becomes too broad of a brush and it starts like undercutting the like core conceit of what the Marvel Universe is, I think.
In some ways.
Again, like, I think dramatically this is fine. I think dramatically this works fine. It's just that all the actual, like, and even where it lands, it ends in a place where I'm like, okay, this is good. Like, I'm happy that, like, we ended in the Superhero Registration Act being passed. This is an interesting place moving forward. I just think, like, it's very, yeah, kind of watery.
Well, let me,
like, application.
Let me just do the fandom thing, too, of, like, you both said you're, you know, you think Tony's in the right. I think Cap's in the right throughout this entire book, and I think it's,
yeah,
like,
I'm
very
not
heavily
saying I think
that
Tony's
way.
Tony's in the right, to be clear.
Like, you both said
I think
that
in, like,
you
some
love
kind of,
cloning Thors
in
who
some
kill people.
Kind of,
like, that's what I heard.
In a naive, utopian, ideologically pure way, I think oversight is better than no oversight. That's about as far as I'm.
You've always been big government. Like, that's a big.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather have, you know, oversight of the military and police than no oversight, right?
Like, I think if you want me to give, like, a clear answer, am I Team Cap or am I Team Captain America? If I'm talking this, like, trying to interpret the bill realistically in a world where it would impact random people who aren't choosing to be superheroes and just have superpowers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously I'm against it, and I'd be Team Cap. Yeah. But in the context of the story, I'm not with Team Iron Man, but I wouldn't be with Team... I'd be fighting against the bill, probably, but not, like...
But not... But you're not,
Charlotte,
like, supporting...
And I are in the...
So like we're
in the,
you're like, let's do this center, through let's course. Do this through the legislative process. Yeah. And Captain America, please calm down. No, I think you're
well,
both
but it's
I think
not
you're
like
both
Captain
right.
America is Protestant. Is protesting, right? He's like
or Protestant.
He's Protestant too.
No, he's definitely Protestant. Sorry.
Like Patriot at one point suggests like starting protests and protests. Thank you.
Yeah, you're good.
As a result, and he's immediately shut down by Reed Richards, and the idea isn't explored further. Like, well, no, realistically, that's what people would do. Why?
We're gonna come back
just
to
because
Reed.
It doesn't involve like laser beams and and
yeah,
metal
that's a
clothes.
Good point.
You're just not exploring that idea. Like,
yeah.
I think the problem with I can't treat the comic seriously as trying to explore real world social and political stuff because it doesn't. It only does it through the lens of what has to be resolved by superheroes fighting. It never does it through the lens of how would real world people react to this? How would they fight it?
Which is how Marvel Comics, you know, that's how Marvel Comics go.
Okay,
right?
Here's how I kind of think that could
do things differently. So if it's trying to do things differently and question how Marvel Comics usually does things, it has to do it
isn't
all
it,
the way through, I think.
Isn't it totally like the Miller... Well, I just want to give you credit on something quick, Zach. Zach, when we covered Ultimates...
Oh, hell yeah. Yes.
Yeah, when we covered Ultimates, you kept highlighting that, like, politically, Miller is all over the place. Like, you never...
Yeah.
Like, he gestures with such broad strokes, often, that he never really says anything, you know? And I feel like Civil War is very much the equivalent of that, where it's like there's such a lack of specificity, and it's such just big picture, you know, like large swaths just sort of gestured at, that it is what Charlotte is saying, which is neither side makes a compelling argument in the book, right?
Yeah.
In the book, the Tony side so heavily undercuts themselves at every stage. They look like absolute fascistic, you know, cops who are given to their worst impulses. Reed has, I think Reed might be the worst character in this whole book, even worse
he's
than Tony.
Mostly because he's just such a weird little creep about it. Like,
yeah,
he's just very. I love what he writes that letter, and he's like, "I was so upset, I went home and I cried for 93 minutes."
Yeah, like, yeah, it's definitely Reed.
He timed it. He's got a stopwatch.
But then, you know, at the same time, I'm like Cap and the Freedom Fighters. It's all, like Cap is so overridden by emotion that he's really not thinking strategically at all. I think the movie, and we don't have to get into it in detail, I think the MCU version of this corrects a lot of the faults in terms of actually making interesting arguments on both sides. I think the movie actually makes it harder. And I remember this being a part of the conversation. It makes it harder to walk away and be like, oh, I definitely prefer Cap's vision, or I definitely prefer Iron Man's vision.
I brought this up last week, And I was like, well, Tony's so clearly in the right. I think like most people would walk away from the movie being like, well, Tony Stark is
I'm
clearly
sure that
like,
was met
correct
with,
here.
With some cap-like resistance.
Yeah, apparently I was wrong in, you know, I did not have my finger on the pulse of how people feel about that. But I totally agree. I think the movie by keeping the scope of it so much smaller, I think that's the key difference, is that it's, you know, based on like basically two other Marvel movies, like build into this.
Yeah.
And then you know everybody involved. Because I think,
which is less cool. More effective, less cool.
See, because I like how, you know, I like where this lands the Marvel Universe. But I do think that, like, almost staying out of the conversation of, like, is it good or bad? Which is, like, I think the comic, especially all the tie-ins, definitely want to, like, start taking sides in this. I think the comic could have been effective if it was, like, here's two guys who have, like, really reasonable reservations on either side. And then you kind of have that, like, unfortunate escalation that pulls them apart, right? Like, you have one incident on one side, and then it just escalates and escalates, and all of a sudden they're like, how did we get here? Like, how have we elevated the violence and the death and the, you know, like, the split between us? How has it gotten this bad?
I mean, Goliath's death should feel way bigger than it does.
Can I just say, I love the big grave. That's such a Miller thing. And yeah. it's a great Miller.
He pulled that trick, like, in The Authority. He did that 8 years ago.
Well, I haven't read The Authority, so.
Write new material.
yeah. Anyway, I think, like, that would have made it a little more effective in that, like, if you had felt that escalating, like, oh, no. Like, oh, no, I wish, you know, like, these guys just need to, like, talk, and then circumstances keep driving them apart.
But I think it doesn't have the time for that.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
I think just it being 7 issues and done, well, not fully done, because the impact of it is going to be felt through the Initiative, which is the era that it comes after. Like, a lot of character turns and decisions just made no sense to me reading the main event, and started make sense with the tie-ins. I think especially, and we can talk about it because it's one of the biggest thing in the comic, Spider-Man deciding to go public and to come out as Peter Parker. I think if you just read the event, he seems like an absolute idiot.
Lunatic,
like,
yeah.
He decides to do that, and not an issue later, he's like,
not an issue later, he's jumping into a glass wall.
That's a really funny beat. I really like that.
Yeah. It's insane, and I think I didn't read all the tie-ins. I read, like, more than half of them, I think. But I read the entire Amazing Spider-Man tie-ins, and I think those are probably the tie-ins that are most essential to, I mean, that are most essential to understanding Civil War and having it feel like a complete experience. Because I think with the conversations between Peter and MJ and May, I am more sold as to why Peter would make that decision, and also the ways in which he's being manipulated by Tony, but also in turn it makes Tony seem even more villainous. Like, he is manipulating everyone around him in awful ways. If you're reading the Amazing Spider-Man tie-ins, Iron Man is the supervillain of this story, like, no questions asked.
And Frontline.
Okay, so as far as tie-ins go, I forgot to credit, and I really should have done this, in our Slack, we have a spreadsheet that is made by our listeners and our Slack members of, like, I mean, it's basically trying to put Comic Book Herald out of a job.
Joke's on him, because I retired several years ago.
Yep. It's a bunch of tie-ins for this, and, like, a lot of it is, you know, like, which ones are essential and which ones are not, you know, the people's opinions on that. So Cody made one for Civil War, so I use that to dig into different tie-ins here.
How can people get access to the spreadsheet in Slack, Zach?
Oh, it's spreadsheet in Slack? That's through patreon.com/mimerevolutionary at the $5 a month tier. You get access, you get an invitation to the Slack, you get 6 months early access to extra issues, another podcast Charlotte and I do. Anyway.
That sounds really cool. Frontline. I'm going to join.
It is. It's a great time. Worth double the money. Frontline. I have to say, I was like, Frontline had been pretty hyped up to me, and I read a couple issues, and I read a handful of tie-ins last night. I set aside a bunch of time for reading comics, and I was like, I'm going to read a bunch of the Civil War tie-ins. And I read a handful, and then I was like, I could read Delicious in Dungeon instead. So I read a lot of Delicious in Dungeon, and I don't regret it. Frontline has one of the most insane things Paul Jenkins does. I think it's in the first issue. He does a little like 3-page short story where he gives a background. He gives some historical information about the internment camps the Japanese Americans were put into in World War II.
Yeah.
And he puts like a poem written by somebody at the time from one of those camps, like overlaid of Spider-Man, like looking at the Statue of Liberty. And it's nuts. It's so offensive.
Well, as Paul Jenkins told me when I interviewed him, he doesn't do politics. So nothing about that.
I mean, he's not wrong in that, you know, that was an evil, but like the idea of like tying that into this was like one of the most bird brain things I've ever seen. I usually really like Paul Jenkins' work, so I even like his Spider-Man a lot, but that
Hank,
was...
I want to come back to the tying conversation. I want to come back to the character motivation thing. I want to say something nice about Civil War first that you're kind of getting at here, which is Miller and... First off, McNiven's awesome, okay? Mm-hmm. I think McNiven draws the hell out of this comic. Iconic poses and designs. You got Dexter Vines on inks. You got colors by Maury Hollowell through the whole thing, who I wasn't super familiar with, but like this book looks like the colors on that, like this book looks amazing. It looks prestigious. You know, I think Zach, you talked about like right up front, like did they just put more into this? I mean, quality wise, it kind of feels like
into this,
doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, like it just, and that's why the trade is like, pick this thing up. Like this is kind of like the platonic ideal of like a modern Marvel superhero comic visually. I was impressed. McNiven, I thought maybe he had more of like a resume before this. Not like this is definitely his biggest work by far to this point. He had jumped on for like a new Avengers stint for like 3 issues with Bendis. And I think during the collective we talked about a little bit and like had done some like Marvel Knights stuff and cross-gen before that. But like this is like kind of like a huge jump, you know, kind of like minors to the pro shot and like absolutely knocks it out of the park, I think. So a huge amount of credit there. I do also think like Miller and McNiven, they pace their concluding pages the best any Marvel comic ever has, certainly to this point. Like every issue drops with like a stone cold stunner of a final moment, right? Very good.
Yeah.
Like when you think about this written for the month to month crowd to drive up interest and conversation in between issues, like a masterclass. It is done so, so well. Like you end with the registration being passed. Second issue with Peter revealing he's Spider-Man. I mean, think about what a huge moment that is in Marvel Universe, right?
I mean, that honestly feels like the biggest takeaway from this is Spider-Man coming out in public and Iron Man, too. We didn't talk about that. It doesn't happen in the main issues, but this is where Tony Stark comes out in public.
Because you've been asking me about that for decades.
It was like, especially Tony Stark. Like, Spider-Man is somebody that it's surprised. Spider-Man's shocking. Tony Stark, I was like, oh, that's right, you aren't, you know, out in public already.
Right.
That's weird. But Spider-Man, I didn't know that was here. I mean, I knew it was happening soon. And, you know, we'll end up talking about that more. I think literally our next episode about Spider-Man is in direct conversation with this.
So. Yeah, it's Fallout, right?
Yeah, and there's a Spider-Man tie-in, just as a quick aside. The Spider-Man tie-ins that are like post-Civil War are also really important, but we are basically picking those up in a Spider-Man issue, Spider-Man episode in 2007. So you don't have to worry too much about that. But yeah, there's big takeaways we won't spoil here from Spider-Man.
But I just think like Miller and McNiven are extremely, extremely good at identifying just like what are the big moments that you could possibly pull into this.
Yeah,
and Martin deliver
Miller
them
is a good comic book writer, Dave. I'm sorry to tell you.
No, let's not. I know. Let's not like lose our minds here. But
as a craftsman of like a well-paced comic that hits like, you know, exciting plot beats, you know, like when he's fire, especially at Marvel, he's really good in the Marvel universe, surprisingly.
Yeah, I mean, Wendy's makes a good burger, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Like, yeah, I mean, it goes down smooth.
The actual content, you know, is often quite questionable. Sometimes it's very good. I really love that Wolverine stuff. But, like, yeah, like, almost always it is just, like, you know, he has a really good hand on pacing out issues.
A fantastic ability to read what is going to get the people talking. And, like, I don't think anybody else comes in to do an event like this and says, yeah, I'm going to unmask Spider-Man, you know, and gets away with it, kind of. And, like, you know, the Spider-Man office is, like, immediately, like, and not that they weren't involved, you know, there's probably conversations behind the scenes happening, but, like, they're immediately, like, on their heels for, like, the next 2 years because of this, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it really shakes things up. You get the Thunderbolts teased. You know, I just, moment after moment, I'm like, these comics end so well. They make you want to keep going. It would be very, like, I could see, like, a super cynical person, but, like, if you're, like, even minorly invested in Marvel Comics, and you're like, yeah, I read two issues and I didn't want to keep going, like, I'd be like, that's on you. You know what I mean? Like, this kind, like, if you can't, like, if you don't want to finish Civil War, forget Love It, but, like, you just want to finish, like, you want to finish this book.
You're probably just not into, like, big two superhero comics.
Yeah, right. Like it's just not, yeah, you're just not in that.
I mean, it's like, this is not my favorite by any means, not even close, but,
first three issues, I was, like, very concerned because I was like, damn it, this is really good. For, like, the first three issues, I was extremely concerned. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to go on and, like, I'm going to talk really positively about this. like the pacing and the skill is fantastic. And then there were so many things that just infuriated me towards the back.
Well, tell me. I feel like you haven't told me any of your... Tell me about what infuriated you, Dave.
Okay. So, I mean, first off, there's just that sort of, like, super common in Marvel, but just that whole, like, well, instead of talking for 2 seconds, we're going to fight. Right? Classic superhero stuff. There's a ton of that. You know, just everything just escalates crazy quickly. There's a moment. Okay. Tell me if you both interpreted this the same way. Thor clone comes in, kills Black Goliath. Really should be bigger, as Charlotte said. Not Black Goliath. He was very big. But, like, should be a bigger moment where, like, Thor killed a guy. Like, a hero has died. Like, we should probably all pause and reconsider. Never really happens. Okay? But there's a moment where I think Iron Man's talking to Spidey when he's kind of losing his mind. And he's like, what happened to Bill is the same thing that would happen with any cop in that situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if a criminal pulled
which
the gun.
Is a large black man got shot and killed. Is Mark making the most secretly subtle, scathing remark of the entire book?
No, I don't think so. I don't think he...
No, yeah.
I think it's the racial implication is probably totally incidental.
Well, yeah, fully over his head, I think.
Which is a problem in and of itself.
He's not an idiot. Like, defend him, I think he is cynical and, you know, has bad politics. Oh my God, I got roasted for saying someone has bad politics once. He has politics that I don't agree with, but... I can't remember who I said has.
I mean, I haven't said it on here in a minute, but, like, I wholly despise who and what Mark Miller is at this point in time.
Yeah, I mean, he makes a lot of really.
Well, it's not forget just politically where they align themselves. He aligns himself and partners and collaborates with the most hateful, worst voices in the comic book space in terms of who he chooses to share space and conversation with on, like, comic book YouTube, on podcast, with Comicsgate. He has made choices where he is very comfortable aligning with those people who would love nothing more than to just spread fear, hate, and disdain, all the things that I just don't think have any place in comics and in the world. Whether or not you want to argue about, you know, that's who he is or not, like, those are the people he associates with. Those are the people he gives time to. So that said, I'm trying to give, you know, my credit where it's due in terms of, like, this book's popularity, in terms of just, like, the exciting Marvel Universe ideas that are brought to it. But yeah, the stuff in the back end that really bugged me is just all the stuff that, like, it's just kind of hand-waved away and keeps it feeling thin. You know, for example, like, Doctor Strange fasting rather than be involved.
That made me want to actually go check out what's happening with him, because the tone of that was Jesus in the desert, right? Like, with the Watcher as the devil trying to tempt him.
A lot of Watcher in this to be like, ooh, it's a big deal, baby.
Did you pick up on that? Because I was like, maybe it's just my... Like,
I wasn't getting Watcher as the devil, no.
Because me neither.
Well, it doesn't make sense that the Watcher is the devil, but, like, Doctor Strange is fasting all off on his own, which is, and then, like, it is the Watcher who's there, right? And he's just like,
yeah.
You could just eat and drink and solve the whole problem, which is exactly what the devil says to Jesus in the desert. Like, just eat. Like, you can just fix it. Like, you can do anything with your powers. Use your, you know, Jesus powers to do everything.
Okay. I didn't get why Doctor Strange. So at first I thought, okay, so he's fasting as like a form of protest. He won't eat again until this is resolved. But then no other character mentions it. So it just was like, oh, you didn't warn anyone that you were doing this. So no one, I think like a few people mention it, but it's like, it feels so unrelated to the rest of the book. It's like, oh, no one cares, Stephen.
If a Sorcerer Supreme fasts in the Arctic and no one sees it, does it have any protest impact? To me, it's a super lazy hand wave away of, I don't know what to do with this character. But I also want to get the credit of like having them elevate the import of my own story by having this conversation with Uatu the Watcher, who only shows up during the biggest things. I also found, okay, Daredevil presenting Tony with the silver coin is one of the corniest things in all of Marvel Comics. And also
totally out of character for Daredevil.
It's out of character. It doesn't feel right. It's also, it means that he was fighting a battle and got arrested and put through processing and then was shipped to the negative zone with a coin under his tongue the whole time. Just to set up.
Not very good.
The super lame burn of calling Tony a genius. Okay? That bothered me. I thought that was super lame. I think Mark writes the worst Reed Richards of all time. I mean, people talk about character assassination with Civil War a lot. Often it's talked about with Tony. For Reed Richards, this is an attempted assassination. I mean, this is absolutely someone who should have nothing to do with this character. So of course he would go on to write the Fantastic Four shortly thereafter. But I mean, just like abysmal, like abysmal Reed stuff. I hate how Reed is presented in this book. I think the pro registration side to me is so badly drawn, because I think to both of your points, like they have a very pragmatic argument, you know? But all of their solutions are like effing insane. You know, and there's a version of this that is really interesting when Reed is talking about, like, you know, Tony had all these ideas about what we can do and what superheroes can be. I would love to hear one of those ideas, because
there's a prison
in the negative zone.
Well, I think the one thing that works there is the initiative, the idea of instating supervised superhero teams for all the states. And spring that across the entire United States, so it's not just in the West and East Coasts. That, I think, is interesting, because it is building something up and proposing an alternative to the previous status quo. I think that's the one thing that's interesting, and I'm like, oh, they're making a decision that isn't insane and unhinged, that actually makes sense for these characters to make, and is arguably a good idea, right? Like, I don't have an argument against that.
Sure, but then the argument against it is, oh, and also let's work with Bullseye, right? So just like they immediately undercut themselves by making the worst decisions, which again are very fun in the sanded down, simplified version of what this comic ultimately is, you know, which is not thoughtful and not actually as interested in engaging with any of the complexity as it suggests it might be early on.
It is kind of like, I do wish he had found a way to make it a little more like the Wolverine comic, where like there's no
Is that your favorite comic?
I love that comic. I think that comic rules. But for especially for Mark Miller, I think it's probably my favorite Mark Miller comic by like a bit. But it's also about nothing. He's not trying to do anything except just like a real exciting superhero, you know, Marvel universe-wide Wolverine at the center story there. There's definitely no implications, so, you know, trying to rile you up about anything. It's just kind of a really fun action movie, which he's very good at. I just read that, what's that horrible comic where with the bad guy that kills everybody and...
Nemesis.
Nemesis, yeah. It's an entertaining comic.
How dare you. Zach?
Zach. Yeah.
I'm trying not to come for your pelvis right
now. Oh, ow, my hip. Oh, please, Dave, be nice. Sorry, my hip's flaring up again.
Okay. You know, obviously we're deep into this. I think, Charlotte, you were saying you kind of have to read the Amazing Spider-Man tie-ins to sort of justify and understand. Because I think the Peter Parker arc through Rhode and Civil War, as told by the actual Spider-Man team, right, with J. Michael Straczynski on that run,
yeah,
is actually really good. I like those comics, and I like Peter and MJ's and May's journey through this. I think it's a really interesting time in Spider-Man. And like you said, it does portray more like, okay, Tony's the mentor, but he's also the manipulator. And I think that, you know, when you think about their new Avengers relationship, like that's, and also just like, he's got money, you know, and like he's got all this power over Peter, somebody who's never had money and never had a father figure. And you see how he wields it. It's a tough look for Tony. And then you also have Frontline, which, you know, Zach, you talk about just some of the craft of it and kind of not getting into it. But also, like, that book more or less tells a story of Tony what? Like weapons of mass destruction, faking, like, an Atlantean plot, right? Like, it's some real master manipulator stuff.
Yeah. Which is funny because you don't really get that in Civil War. If you just, because I read just the main event first, I didn't read it, like, chopped up in order. If you just read Civil War, Tony
comes off well.
He's pretty chill.
Like, I think Miller prefers Iron Man by far.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
Certainly in the Ultimates he does. You know, you kind of see him slipping into some of those tendencies with both characters, even though this is their 616 counterpart. Anything else tie-in-wise or character-wise that feels essential that we haven't talked about yet?
No. I mean, nothing I read. I read, like, some Wolverine issues. Had some good...
Wolverine Umberto hunts down Ramos Nitro, art. Who committed the incident.
Yeah. That, which is fun. Like, that's a fun issue, but it's, you know... I didn't read anything else that felt like... You know, like, event tie-ins, if they want to feel essential or even important, it has to feel like, oh, if you didn't read this, you're, like, walking out of the event having missed something, rather than, like, oh, those were some good issues of Wolverine that happened concurrently.
I think maybe there's less, you know, they're less essential in a lot of, and there's a ton of tie-ins, right? So if you're looking at this, like, what do I have to read? That's a short list. But I do think, you know, one thing that is good about this event is it does lend itself towards tie-ins just sort of falling within the structure somewhat naturally. You know, I mean, one of the huge complaints of event tie-ins is, like, they derail, you know, a comic you may have otherwise been enjoying. And I actually think Civil War, like, I mean, yeah, there's some of that, but it also, like, kind of makes a lot of sense, you know? Like, I do, as a fan of this stuff for the time, and as someone who does like continuity, but more than anything, I just like the shared universes, you know? And I like that if an event is happening, that it's big enough that everyone else is at least aware of it. You know what I mean? Like, if something like this is happening, it's weirder to me if X-Factor never mentions it, you know? That's, like, my pro-tie-in argument. It doesn't mean they're all amazing.
I think my main problem with the structure of it is, I mean, I mentioned it earlier, the fact that the X-Men are kind of an afterthought is really weird because it's trying to use superheroes to talk about real world issues or displace superhero stories in a real world context of thinking about political issues, and not having the X-Men there for that, especially when you're talking about, like, freedom of people with superpowers and them being threatened by governments and laws. That's weird. That's what the X-Men are all about. And I'm not saying it should be an X-Men event or something, but not having that voice. I think you have it, like, a few times with Wolverine early on, but that's, like, yeah, just a few pages, that's it. Not having that voice there feels weird. And because I don't think at any point you have, like, you don't have that in the mutant metaphor sense with the mutant characters, and you don't have that either with, like, the black characters or the, let's say, the queer characters, but there aren't any.
Oh, well, didn't you hear, who was it? There's some gay jokes made in this one.
Yeah. There's a gay joke that's, like, actually, like, accidentally kind of fun, of, like, the Punisher saying to Luke Cage and Spider-Man, like, get a room, and Spider-Man playing something like that, oh, are you jealous, honey, or something. It's just like, I could see if it wasn't Mark Miller writing this, I could see it being kind of fun and making fun of the Punisher. I don't know that that's actually what's going on here.
I really, yeah, well, just remind me of the Punisher. I don't want to derail you. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, just saying, it's missing that voice of characters that are at the intersection of the superhero and talking about this from real life experience. And I think it's really missing that real life texture to it. So I'm like, I don't know what this is talking about outside of superhero stories.
Do you think you would actually want? I mean,
no.
I don't want that at all. Yeah, I'd want that, but in a world where this comic is just something entirely different.
You're right. Like, sure, you're both right, but this is not. Oh my gosh, is this?
That's why, like, when I'm like, if I'm trying to, you know, imagine a world, like, imagine something that smooths this out. It's not that the conversation gets deeper. It's that, like, the drama of it kind of sidesteps the conversation even more, because I think, what this comic is it's not really that interested in getting into it. And, you know, it is kind of like, Dave, you were, you know, mentioning, like, the comic book shop arguments, right? The, like, I am just as interested in a vacuum as arguing should superheroes be regulated as should, you know, can the Hulk beat the Thing? Both of them are just, like, total abstract questions that don't really mean anything in the context of the stories that are being told, even in this story, I think. So it's like, it's not something that I don't think a comic couldn't do, like a different comic, like a Watchmen or strong female protagonist. We talk about that all the time. Yep. Like, that has those conversations, and I think, like, does a really good job of them, has really interesting conversations. But, like, in the context of the Marvel Universe, I don't know. I don't care. And it's also, like, that is that kind of, you know, people, like, I'm not judging anyone who's doing this, but it is that kind of, like, nerd argument where you're just arguing stuff that's not even really remotely tied to the text, and it's just kind of,
yeah, it's just, like, you know, it's just taking a step into fiction, yeah.
Which is fine if you're into it. It's just totally not what I...
Well, none of us, like, we're all pretty, like, big, like, nonfiction, like, history buffs.
Yeah, we're big nonfiction guys. Yeah. Punisher being in Captain America's group is great. I really liked how
I like the Punisher stuff here, I gotta say.
Yeah, it's really good.
When the two villains show up,
and he immediately shoots them in the head.
He just gasses them right in front of everyone. Like, that's a good beat, I gotta say. Uh-huh. It's a good Punisher beat.
Yeah, it's very good. Like, no hesitation, no, you know, he's just like, they're thieves.
So, Zach, having never read this before, so, like, one of the nice endings is you get the return of Thor at the end of issue 3 or 4 during this big battle. Like, what was going through your head at that point?
I mean, I did think it was Thor coming back, but I also was like, well, that's weird. How did he convince? And then I very quickly picked up on that it's not Thor. I was like, this is not the real Thor, because he was just so adamantly on the side of superhero registration. I was like, that seems kind of odd.
Yeah.
Like, why would this guy be on this side? But then again, I kind of still bought it because, like, honestly, the sides are often kind of arbitrary. So I would have had to buy it just as much as anything else, I guess. Anyway. But no, you know, it becomes clear pretty quick. It's not really him. I am itching for him to come back. I mean, I know it's soon.
Getting close.
2007, we're reading the Thor comic. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, I feel like when you read this in the MMY Club, you have more of an awareness of, like, oh, we haven't seen Thor in 4 years.
Yeah, you know? It's been I kind of wish they would do this more often. Like, maybe not literally, like, kill off a character so they're gone, but just, like, put characters on the shelf for a while.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Totally. Well, it's something with wrestling that happens all the time. But, like, wrestlers take...
Here we go.
I know, I'm sorry. But, like, 2 or 3 months off, they just take a break.
Yeah.
You know, to, like, recover or to take a break, whatever. And when they show up again, oh, my God. The anticipation builds. You know MJF? You know that guy? Maxwell Jacob Friedman?
No.
Nope.
Yeah, well, he was the world champ, Zach,
Zach, Charlotte and I are not plugged in.
He's a pretty big deal, but he's been missing since December, and, like, whew, the anticipation for this guy to return is...
Well, I bet his family's worried sick.
Yeah. He still tweets sometime.
Okay, good.
Please help. I don't know where I am. Stuff like that, you know. Yeah, so he's fine. Anyway.
Oh, Charlotte, what do we miss? What do we miss, Charlotte?
I think
the train you're about to miss, Charlotte.
Oh, yeah. That's
yeah. Right. No, I think we discussed it. I think the one thing I would say is many of the unanswered questions here are answered in the better version of this, which is Civil War II, upcoming in 2016.
Oh, I can't, dare you.
I can't wait.
Charlotte, you don't have a broken pelvis, so the gloves are coming off for that.
Punch her in the pelvis.
It does feel like when Civil War II came out, it was an abject disaster. Maybe we'll talk about it in 2016. We definitely will not be reading it.
No, we have to read. What do you mean?
We'll be reading it. What
of
are you
course
talking
we'll
about?
Be reading it.
Vociferous arguments for reading Civil War II.
I mean, we have to read the worst stuff. Also, I mean, it's notable, right?
Here's what I'll say.
Those are fun.
I feel like Civil War III is still on the table. I feel like it's understandable why Marvel would want to come back to something like this. It kind of works. It does.
Hmm.
Of heroes on different ends of a philosophical argument that is at least evergreen and interesting enough that it does kind of... I at least have to put pen to paper to be like, okay, what do I actually think about this?
Yeah. There's a world in which this works a lot better too, this conversation, and like built into the comics. So.
For sure.
You know what? There is a version of Civil War that I actually really, really, really like and I think is done really, really well at Marvel. But it's not called Civil War, and I can't say more about it without spoiling stuff. But it's a Hickman thing, and we're about 10 years away from it. And we'll see when we get there. But I think there's a version of this done by Hickman that I think is a really, really successful form of Civil War. And we'll talk about it again when we get to that in a few years.
I thought you were going
to
talk about my favorite Civil War is the French War of Religion.
Oh, boy.
That's your go-to?
Back in the 16th century, yeah.
Zach loves just out Francoing you. Loves to just
Charlotte didn't even know about that war, I bet.
Come on, man.
Charlotte, do you know the French? Do you know the French artist Herman?
What?
Do you know the French
Herman.
Artist?
The French Herman. Herman.
H e r m a n n.
No, I don't know Herman.
Okay. You don't know her, man.
Wait, Charlotte, wouldn't that name be pronounced differently?
Well, I spelled it. That's why I spelled it.
So I don't freaking know.
The comic is in French, is why.
Wait, it's a comic now?
So I interviewed Andre Lima Orejo recently, and this was on his Instagram. He was like, I just read this great book by the iconic Herman, and I went. I'm like, oh, I got to read this book, but it's in French. So obviously, my first thought was like, oh, I bet Charlotte knows about it. But sounds like maybe I'll send it to you.
Oh, who did Jeremiah?
Maybe I don't know.
I think I know who it is. Yeah,
it was the first time in my life that I was very tempted to learn French.
Is it Herman Oupen? Oupen? Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Herman.
Well, you didn't say his last name. You just said it like as if
yeah,
a man
but
goes by
his
Herman.
His artist name. Like he usually signed his books as just Herman.
It's like Jason or Jock. Or share.
It's very funny listing Jason. Like anyone will know who that is.
Fantagraphics Jason. If you're
no, college, I know who Jason is. I killed Hitler, right? Or I love Hitler.
You did?
I don't remember.
Yeah. No, I killed Hitler. Yeah.
Okay. Civil War. Do you think best event of the 2000s so far? I think so.
That we've read so
House
far.
Yeah. I think House of M and Disassembled are the only real contenders. I think.
Well, if you count Planet Hulk as an event.
I don't think. I mean, I guess Annihilation. I didn't count because I'm, you know, kind of a hater. But
you are a hater. Annihilation is much better than Civil War.
I prefer
Civil War to Annihilation.
Oh, right in the heart.
Yes!
Right in the heart.
Yes!
Yeah.
Oh. It's also just like Civil War. Also,
shot
an
through the heart.
35
you're
minutes to
read. I'll say the art carries it a lot. I think I'm just picturing the art for Civil War and the art for Annihilation is my head. And the art for Annihilation is good, but Steve McNiven is doing like all time great work here, and I think just it helps sell Civil War as just a huge good thing. that tips it over the edge for me. I agree. Think.
One is the loneliest number you will ever see.
We lost him.
Oh, Dave, boy. Can we get like, can we have Comic Herald like create some kind of award that we can issue to Mark Miller? You know, we should send him something for making the best event of the 2000s.
Well, I have a couple thoughts here.
We're still in 2006.
We're still in 2006.
That's a good point. Okay.
The rest of my thoughts cannot be spoken aloud on this podcast. But yeah. We do. I mean, here's the thing, though. I mean, Charlotte, do you anticipate any of the other 2010, the rest of the 2000s events are going to surpass this?
Realm of Kings, Dark Reign, Secret Invasion.
Now, you recorded Annihilation Conquest, which is going to come out next year. Did you like that more than Annihilation? Just a little tease.
I liked it more than Annihilation.
But not more than Civil War still?
I might have liked it more than Civil War. Okay. As an event, as a whole, I think I liked it more than Civil War. If we're just talking the main series, I might like Civil War more.
Yeah.
That's a good question. That's actually more a good competition.
Okay. Feeling a little better. I mean, Civil War is World a tight Hulk package. More. Oh, yeah, we got World War Hulk. I like that more.
Yeah, World War Hulk for sure, but it's not really an event. Charlotte, I feel like I really have to tell you, you have a train to catch. Like, you got to get going.
I know.
We have to end this.
Okay.
Someone's got to end this episode for you.
You both broke my heart, but I really enjoyed talking with you today.
So I think we're all like more or less on the exact same page for Civil War.
just the Annihilation comparison is what I mean by that. Mm. I think otherwise, more or less. Well, I mean, you seem to dig it a little bit more than I do, I think.
Which is weird because I complained about it more, but yeah, it's just...
Yeah, it's definitely for me like... Well, whatever. We're done. Charlotte's got to go. Good job, everybody. You can find more from us at patreon.com/mymarvelousyear. You can rate and review on iTunes. We're going to be back with 2007, where we're going to do Civil War Fallout. We're going to do Fallen Sun, Civil War The Confession, Avengers The Initiative. Both of those last two were added by patron David A. Go to patreon.com/mymarvelousyear. One of the tiers you can add to the list. Make everyone read along with you. Some good comics in that case, which I'm glad are on the list now. So part one will be Civil War Fallout. Then we're going to get back to the Bendisverse, Mighty Avengers, New Avengers. And guess what? Illuminati. Very excited about that.
Illuminati?
Oh, nailed it.
Sorry.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Music is by Disaster Piece. I'm Dave. That's Charlotte. That's Zach. We'll see you next year.
See you next year.